When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Looking around, I finally see, I think I need a change. The rat race, I wanna flee, my world I'll rearrange. I'm getting back to the roots of how it's meant to be. Growing gardens, picking fruit, racing livestock, living free. It's a modern homestead.
Hello and welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast. I'm your host, Harold Thornbrough, joined by Rachel Jamieson again. How are you, Rachel?
Pretty good. It's been like 70 degrees here in November. It's unheard of.
Yeah, I've been out in a t-shirt for the last 2 days working around here and doing things. What's going on in the homestead?
What is going on in the homestead? I have little baby Brussels sprouts that I'm hoping will actually grow.
They're time for like, that.
I thought they would grow with snow. Like, I think they'll grow a little bit through the snow, but they're okay. Like, I don't know, marble size right now on top on the stalks.
Yeah,
the little Brussels are. So I've read they'll grow in the snow. We'll see.
Well, let us know.
They're a little late. I know.
Got all your preserving done?
Never
have the preserving done.
But don't you know that on a homestead it's never done? And if it is, you think up something else to fill that.
Yeah. Cabin. Yeah. I pulled some cabbage out of the freezer and did some stuff with it. And, you know, I still got some stuff I'm dehydrating here and there. I tried not to do too much, though. I'm slowing way down. I think I've got most of it done.
Yeah. I'm going to be dehydrating a bunch of mushrooms. Somebody gave me a ton of oyster mushrooms. So
that's awesome.
Going in the dehydrator.
Yep. Yeah. I've been working on the greenhouse. What's that?
Did you get sweat out of there?
It was hot. It was hot. Yeah, because it's been like in the 60s, you know, upper 60s. And yeah, in that greenhouse, it felt like it was about 90. But I didn't leave the wood stove on. Let's put it that way. But I've got pond in there. I've got actual fish swimming around in my greenhouse in the floor. It's pretty wild.
I was gonna say, did you end up digging down
that? I dig down, but I'm gonna tell you what, I dug that out and I had planned on going about 3 feet deep, and at about 2 feet I gave up, because I'm gonna tell you, that ground after about a foot got like a rock. I was having a heck of a time, and it was taking forever. I mean, I just spent several hours digging that out, and I got it down a couple feet, and I said, good enough.
But at least you're in the ground. And have you even tried your wood stove yet, or has it just been too hot?
I've ran it twice. Yeah, I've had fire in there a couple nights last week when it was cold. As it got down to low 40s, high 30s, and yeah, I fired it up and it ran me out of there. It was so hot.
If you put a hammock in there and a teapot, you may never have to leave.
I don't think there's room for that, especially now that I filled it up with the aquaponic system. Yeah, I put that in. I got the shelves in. I've got the tubs that I put the grow medium in. In there, I haven't filled anything up yet. I'm not circulating it or anything like that yet, but I did put the fish in there. I did fill it up with water and put the fish in there. So there's just goldfish. Okay. I just took all the goldfish out of the pond and threw them in there, and they seem happy. They're running the length of that thing back and forth. And I should have it. I think I'm going to try to get it mostly running tomorrow. And maybe get a few things planted. I don't know. We'll see.
You're going to have to do some videos and blogging on.
Yeah, I've been taking a lot of pictures and doing a little short videos. I'm going to try to piece together as I've been building it. And I think it's going to work out pretty well. As long as I can keep the heat, you know, up in there. I am going to have an electric heater in there on a thermostat because, you know, I'm going to stock the wood stove up at night, but I'm, you know, in the middle, right. You know, 2-3 in the morning, it's going to start dropping pretty quick. And then from that point on, I figure the heater can kick on and run till the sun comes up, and, you know, and it'll kind of balance out.
Do you have trees big enough to collard and coppice to use?
Well, I do have a lot that I've cut, but also we have a camper at the campground, and I cut a lot of wood that I have stacked out there for campfires and stuff. And I'm just going to go ahead and bring that home and cut some new out there for next year for the campfires. So I have quite a bit out there. I'm just going to bring home and use it up. I don't like it being more than a couple seasons old anyway.
Yeah, we have some we need to use because it's set around and it's starting to get a little punky.
Yeah, yeah. So I'll bring all it home, and that should probably last me most of the winter, I would think, what I have there. So, yeah, I'm kind of excited to get that rocking and rolling.
I'm excited for you. I'm a little jealous.
Yeah, I've been just sitting in there, just kind of staring. I did, like I said, last week, I built a fire, and I was sitting there. I bought me a little chair in there, and I'm sitting by the wood stove in the greenhouse going, yeah, I'm going to be spending some hours out here this winter.
You might have to do a few live shows out there.
I could see it happening. I could absolutely see it happening.
Even one of these out there.
I don't know if the Wi-Fi will connect real good out there or not. If it will, I will. If it won't, I could hotspot my phone maybe and do it that way. I don't know.
I would have a hard time leaving out there. It sounds very cozy.
It's going to be neat. You got that water running now. That sounds kind of cool. But now when I actually hit the aquaponics up, it's only going to probably run just a few minutes every hour as far as the circulation, so you won't really hear water running except for I think it only ran like 5 minutes an hour circulate that water to just keep it going, keep everything wet, and it would fill up and then go down, and it was only like 5 minutes an hour, so it doesn't run a lot. It's just but that's good, you know, you keep the electric bill down that way with the pump running. And and I actually think with it running that little and with the size of pump I have, it might even be something like next year. I might even look at like maybe getting a couple solar panels and a little battery set up and try to run that solar. I don't know. It'd be something to experiment with maybe next year. This year, I think I'm just going to keep it, you know,
a couple of yard cameras because we had, you know, bad neighbors for a long time. But they just have these little tiny, I don't even know, maybe 8x10. They might be a little smaller than the solar panels on them. We never had to charge them, even though they would take multiple videos an hour.
A pump would probably take something pretty heavy duty, I would think. But I think it could be done pretty easy. So I will see how that goes. I'd still have to have power out there for the electric heater when it does kick on, because you're not going to run that on a solar panel, probably. Not anything I'm going to put out there anyway. Not one that small. But yeah, I just more things, experiments to run in the future. Fun. But we'll see how it goes this year.
I'm excited. That sounds fun.
Yeah, I got to take on little experimental tasks every year to keep myself occupied. I think I'm going to do the microgreens. I just did the aquaponics on one. I was thinking about doing it on both sides of the greenhouse, but I just did it on one side, and I'm just going to set the shelves up on the other side. And I think I'm going to do my microgreens and stuff out there instead of in the kitchen this year too. Have it all out there, you know?
I get it. I mean, my kitchen right now, sometimes it feels like it gets cluttered when you start having all that stuff sitting around. Yeah. It would be nice out there.
Yeah, I think as long as I can just keep it warm enough. But even there, I'm actually going to do a little bit of insulating on the north side of it. And because, you know, that's the side the sun doesn't come through anyway. So I'm going to block that off and insulate it a little bit and try to just do everything I can to, you know, hold as much heat in there as I can.
Right. Yeah.
It's a fun little experiment. Yeah. Well, today we're going to talk about something related to what we talked about the last episode we did together, and we talked about closed loop systems on your property. And we mentioned a couple times you could expand that closed loop system to your community and expand your network a little bit. And as we talked a little bit after we'd done that podcast, we talked a little bit and we thought of a few things. We thought, well, that might be a good episode because there's a lot of ways you can expand that system into your neighborhood, into your local community, that really make it really in a lot of ways takes homesteading to the next level, especially for small scale homesteads like ours. I would say, especially if you're an urban homesteader, suburban homesteader, or just have a, you know, acre or less, maybe a rural homestead. If you can connect with a lot of other homesteaders in your area and network that and involve that in your closed loop systems, It just makes you that much more, I'll use the word self-sufficient, but really, I guess it would be community sufficient, makes you more resilient. I just think it offers a lot to the homesteader, to a community of homesteaders to expand that system. So today we're going to talk about how that would work, maybe some ideas on how you could make that happen, and maybe get that started in your area, wherever you're at, you know, wherever somebody's at in their homestead. Maybe you're the person that's going to spark that, and you're going to get with some people in your area and you're going to make that happen. So we're going to talk a little bit about that today. So the first thing I think we'll talk about is sharing labor. When you expand that closed loop system, you can actually get help and help other people with their homesteads. And I think that's huge. I mean, the phrase many hands make light work. Well, I've had some jobs where I could have used a few more hands on. How about you?
Oh, yes. Lots of them, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I used to do something like that similar at church. It was mostly the men did it. They called it the Hairy Chested Man Project.
Okay.
And we used to do that at church, but a lot of times the women started going along too. So we would, everybody in the church had like a big project that they needed to get done. And sometimes it was a roof, like a new roof on a house, or I can't remember. There's other times it was like a new, I think there was, we did a deck. I'm trying to remember all the things, but literally everybody from the church would go and we'd get it done in like one day.
Yeah. It kind of falls in the vein of an old Amish barn raising or something. You bring everybody together and make it happen. Yeah. I think it's great.
It's easier to give up your time than it was to accept the help.
Yes. We talked a little bit about that last time, how it's real easy for me to go over and help somebody else. It's very hard for me to ask for help. Yes. But I think if you build a community with the understanding that that's part of what you're doing, what you're trying to accomplish, you know, if it's just randomly calling somebody and say, hey, could you help me with this? I need a hand, you know, or whatever, that's different. But if you intentionally put something together and you got with a group of other homesteaders and you said, hey, let's form a little, you know, there's a lot of these communal projects where people live in community with each other. And it's like that, but I think better, because in a way, because when you form a communal living situation, there's a lot of issues you're dealing with just relationships and whatnot. This is separate in that way. So you run your homestead the way you want, but you can still have that communal thinking in the sense that you help one another, and that you know, and if everybody knows that going in, it's easier, I think, to ask for, you know, take your turn at receiving the help, especially if you've been there for everybody else.
We weren't this organized when we did it at church, because it was a very small church, but I think you would almost have to, like, maybe everybody decide on a project kind of to force people to, yes, you're going to accept the help of your friends because you're going to be giving the help. So you just come up with this list of what you need done at your house this year, and everybody does that, and then you pick the projects.
Yeah, I could see getting together and having maybe a quarterly meeting or something and say, you know, who's got projects going on, and then have a list and say, okay, this date we're going to work at Harold's house, and this date we're going to work at, you know, Roy's house or whatever. And just have a, you know, a set to where you're taking turns and everybody's showing up, and, you know, maybe not everybody can go to every one of them, but, you know, I think it could be a pretty neat way to expand that network and get bigger projects done quicker.
I think that you get, at least with our, even within our very small church at the time, you got a lot of people that somebody was skilled in carpentry and another person was maybe a little bit better at plumbing and another person was really good at painting and another person had done brickwork before. You kind of combined all that, and that whoever that was the person that would kind of at that time take control and say, okay, no, you have to make sure the bricks are level over here. And
And I think we're talking right now about these big projects where a group of people come together and accomplish some big project. But I think on a work exchange level, you could say, okay, I've got the skill of, say, you know, building carpenter skills. You've got mechanic skills. Okay. Now we don't need 10 people involved in this, but you've got a small carpentry project. Hey, let me come over and help you. And you're a good mechanic. Why don't you come over and help me fix my pickup truck or fix my rototiller or whatever? And we kind of just one-on-one work exchange. Yeah, and so it's not this big group of people showing up, but it's one-on-one group work exchanges.
Yeah. I think that doesn't even have to be like, I think of like the old school quilting bees.
Yes. Yeah.
Or old school. Now I have done this where you make like sauerkraut with a bunch of people.
Yeah.
You get together like 20 people and you just hammer out a bunch of sauerkraut and everybody would go home with a 5-gallon bucket or two of sauerkraut to ferment. And, you know, you could do it with canning. I've done this with butchering when we.
Yeah, I was going to say processing too.
We've done that with. That's actually how I learned how to butcher. I had no idea, but I just showed up at one of those. And that was my duck feather story that I tell with the duck feathers everywhere. But I had no idea what I was doing, but I showed up because I wanted to learn and I went home with some ducks.
I know a lot of farms that do that with chicken processing days. They'll have like 200 chickens to process. Well, you come help out for the day and you leave with a chicken. You know, you get to learn how to do it. Plus you get to leave with one or two chickens or whatever, you know, for your labor for coming in and working. And I think that's a really good way to do that as well. But yeah, I mean, I think
planting fields. I remember a couple of years ago, we had a friend, a bunch of people showed up and we planted, I think it was corn and pumpkins and squash. Like, I can't remember. It was huge field, though, probably 20 acres that we planted. We got it done and like it was unbelievable. There was probably 40 people that showed up.
Yeah,
maybe a little less. And we got that done in before noon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to go through and talk about different things first, but at the end, after we're done, I want to talk maybe about some ways we can actually help people facilitate this. But yeah. So I don't want to, I'm mentioning that now because I'm tempted to jump in and do it before we kind of mention the skills or the things that you can share.
So planting, harvesting.
Yeah.
Quilting bees, you know, lots of stuff.
Putting in a garden. I mean, just digging a garden for the first time. Everybody shows up with the rototillers and starts tearing it up or whatever, or just starts coming in and putting down cardboard. I mentioned to you earlier about permablitzes, and you said you had never heard of those, but it's when a bunch of permies get together and work on a property. Okay. Matter of fact, I'll put a link in the show notes about kind of how to organize a permablitz, but it's for a bunch of people who are really interested in permaculture, and they and you kind of organize a day where everybody comes in, puts in the swells, digs the areas. I mean, does everything, start planting the trees, putting in the guilds, do everything all in one day or one weekend or whatever. And it's done, you know, they'll come in with cardboard and mulch and, you know, you just got a 10, 12, 15 people come in and just blast a yard out, especially in urban and suburban communities and get it done.
I think Nicole Sauce is doing that this weekend at her place.
I think it was last weekend. They actually maybe did that. Yeah. Food forest. They were putting in a food forest. Yeah. I heard that. I mean, it's something that's so cool to do these permablitzes, but it kind of works on just the homesteading level. I mean, if you're not a permaculture person, I mean, it can be the same exact thing on this level. Yeah. And what's cool about this is when you gather a bunch of people around to do a bunch of different jobs all at once like that, you're going to just one of the natural things that happens is you learn some skills that maybe you didn't know how to do. Somebody shows up and starts building something. You're kind of witnessing that. You're learning how to build something. You're learning how to plant trees properly. You're learning how to do things while they're helping you do it. And that's just a side benefit of it, really, which is really cool.
And you get create friendships and community. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's excitement. I mean, you can go. Oh, everybody gets all excited and they're like, oh, your farm's next and your farm's next.
Yeah. It becomes such a good time doing something like that. You can't wait for the next project to go help somebody do it. Yeah, absolutely. But labor is not the only thing that you can really share. It's a big one. And I mean, it's something that we think of first because we think of these projects that are huge, but just sharing food. I mean, you grow something that I don't grow. I grow something you don't grow. Guess what? We can trade. We can just trade those can for can or, you know, jar for jar or whatever, you know, and have it swap. That way you don't have to grow everything on your little homestead. You can pick. And and the thing is, if you can organize this right, you can get together and kind of plan out. It's one thing to plan out your garden, but get a few people together and plan it out in a community sense and say, you're going to grow that and we're going to grow this and we're just going to. You know, we're going to grow more than we need. We're going to grow enough for four families of this. You're going to grow enough for four families of that. Now we can trade those things. And that's actually easier than growing a bunch of little beds of little bits of things, you know, sometimes to just put in big long rows of something.
Yeah. I mean, I think of that, like, you know, an orchard, somebody that has is really good at trees, they could trade with somebody that's really good with growing potatoes.
Like I have a ton of pears, you know, we get a lot more pears than I can even eat on our pear trees, you know, and somebody out, you know, out there is growing something else. Yeah, I can trade those pears for that. And yeah, it's just a great way to look at it. But it isn't just produce either. It's animals as well. Yeah. I actually have an experience with that because I raise rabbits and quail, but I know a guy who raises pigs and chickens and he likes rabbit. And we've actually traded rabbits for that's pork, which is amazing. I'll do that all day long, you know? Right, so we actually got, and I got to tell you, he's pretty generous with it too. He gives me way more pounds in pork than I give him in pounds in rabbit. Yeah. He really does.
Yeah.
But we do that. We've done that a couple of years in a row, and that's pretty neat when you can find somebody willing to do that. So, you know, even when it comes to livestock, you can get different meats for what you're raising, you know, and swap out. And, so not everybody can raise everything, but somebody can raise something usually.
Well, you could trade your pears for some pork too.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can do egg trades and all kinds of things. I mean, you're just a lot you can do there. So yeah, trading food, I think is a way that you could definitely become way more self-sufficient.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Also trading food for livestock. You need something to feed your animals. And now I could maybe, you know, trade you, you know, a few bushels of pears or apples or something for, you know, a few bales of something to feed my animals through the winter, you know, you know, somebody who has a bigger piece of property that's actually, you know, maybe a hay field or something. So, I mean, there's just, you can think outside the box and expand your community even on those levels.
Friends right now, well, a lot of bakers, a lot of people grow pigs that I'm friends with, and they right now are going and picking up huge amounts of pumpkins out of fields.
Yeah.
You could trade pumpkins for pork later when the pigs, you know, stuff.
Well, you mentioned last week about the leaves with your neighbors, you know, taking their leaves and doing things. So even stuff like that for your compost, you could even do some trading with and stuff, trading a little labor for the leaves or whatever, you know, and getting that. So, I mean, it doesn't have to be one for one. I mean, it could be, like I said, we could do a labor share for food share for labor, whatever.
You got to think outside the box. So the neighbors, we have some neighbors that are gone for a little bit and we're watching their house, and in trade for that, his family are beef farmers. They're giving us beef.
There you go.
Just watching their house.
Yeah. Or if they had like animals to take care of, you know, say, hey, can you come, you know, milk my cow or feed my chickens or whatever for a week while we're gone? Hey, when we process the chickens this year, we can give you a couple chickens for doing that or something. I mean, it's just things like that, you know, and that it's not a hard thing to do. It's pretty easy. And people are usually pretty generous with sharing like that. I mean, especially the homesteader community, because that's just the way homesteaders are. It's the way it's experience I have with homesteaders anyway. Maybe there's some out there that are greedy, but
town, so, you know, thinking outside the box a little bit, if you live in town or in an apartment and you don't have a lot to give, one of the things you can give is time. What if you like to bake? So you got a busy homesteader that maybe you could bake bread and trade eggs with them. You could, you know, there's all sorts. You could trade time. Or
I used to go and do some work on this farm just on the weekends, like for a few hours, to get hunting permission in this guy's woods. And I'm thinking that right there, it's a homestead provision. You know, I would go out there and deer hunt, squirrel hunt, and everything else. And you know, I would trade him, you know, maybe 10 hours of labor, you know, every couple of weeks or something. I'd go out there and help. He'd have a project, say, hey, come out here and do this. And you got access to it. Now, I wish he still lived there. He sold the farm and moved away, because I loved hunting there. I mean, it was a great place to hunt. He had, I don't even know how big that woods was, maybe 80 acres or something of a woods. And it was great hunting, and I loved it.
Right.
And, that's another thing you can do. You could even think beyond just the gardens and your orchards and your, you know, things like that. Think about hunting and trapping. And I mean, there's other things that are homestead related.
People that trade baking for labor.
Yeah.
A couple of my friends make very beautiful like birthday cakes and wedding cakes. Mm-hmm. And they've traded that for somebody to come and move stuff on their farm.
Yeah.
I
actually, a friend of mine actually had he has a little mowing business, and he used to mow this, these people's property. And they had probably a 5-acre lake or pond on their property. And it had huge bass and stuff in there, and he'd mow their yard for free to be able to fish in their pond. He could come out anytime he wanted and fish, and he'd bring his family out there, and they'd set up a tent out there and actually camp and fish.
I have fish in my pond. Somebody can mow my yard.
There you go. Get them out there, do some work for fishing. I mean, it's just things like that. I mean, it is definitely another step into that closed loop, but it's stuff that you can think of and that, you know, you can make that network of community, of local community, and involve it in your closed loop system. It isn't so closed loop anymore, but it opts you out of the bigger loop. The actual food system, the buying stuff across the country, coming from across the world, and it makes it more local and
creates community so that when something happens, the community is there to help lift people up. We just have lost that, I think, that sense of community, that neighborly. Yeah. Everybody misses the days when grandma and grandpa sat on the porch and snapped beans. And this is kind of bringing that back a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was telling you that we're both Little House on the Prairie fans, you more so the books, but I used to watch the TV show all the time, even. I loved it, you know, back when I was a kid, I loved it. But there's kind of two first episodes. There's the one where they're actually in a different place and then they move to Walnut Grove and they land, but I think it's the first episode in Walnut Grove. Anyway, it's called A Harvest of Friends. And the whole premise of that one is that he's working a job he's trading some labor for some seed to plant his fields, and you know, Charles Ingalls, and he ends up falling out of a tree, flying a kite with his kids because he climbs up to get the kite out of the tree. And I won't get into the whole story, but anyway, he hurts his back, can't finish the job, and he's going to lose the deal, you know, lose the seed. Right. Well, they had just moved to Walnut Grove, you know, and they've been there a few months. And he's made all these friends because he's been helping people out. He's been, you know, just building friendships already, you know, and helping people in every chance he gets. And they're just a wonderful addition to the community. And because he's been like that, when he hurts himself, all these people show up. They finish the job for him. They actually go out and finish his fields for him and plant the seed. And, you know, it's a harvest of friends. In the closing, it's like, you know, he reaped a harvest that he didn't even know he planted because, you know, he built all these friendships in this community. And I think that that's something that we should all strive for as homesteaders, to build to harvest those friends, you know, and plant the seeds of those friendships and then harvest from that, you know, and that be there when we need it.
Yeah. I mean, we not only foster the friendship, but I mean, you get everybody's heads together and if you've got a problem, mm-hmm. you just learn so much from everybody. You learn from the guy that's really good at trees to the person that breeds tomatoes. I mean, you just learn so much in those together times. And
absolutely.
I really enjoy them. But I do have to, like, I think it's not uncommon for homesteaders to be a little bit introverted.
So yeah.
I kind of have to force myself to go to those. And it's hard because you're busy. You got this long to-do list. Mm-hmm. But every time I make myself go and do something like this, it's always amazing.
Absolutely. And I think that it's something I've not been very good at, but it's something, this is funny because, well, now I'm not gonna get into this yet because I want to talk about the kind of facilitating in a minute. So I'm not gonna go there yet. So anyway, we talk about labor share. We talk about food share. Another thing we thought of was tool share, our tools and equipment, you know, making it available to a community because everybody's got different stuff, you know. I had this really good friend named Chuck. I actually haven't seen him in a long time, but he used to borrow my pickup truck all the time. Like, he was calling me, "Hey man, I'm doing something this week. Can I use your truck?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure." You know, finally he did this maybe, I don't know, several times, 10 times or something over a summer. And I went, "Chuck, you need a truck." And he's like, "I don't need a truck." And I said, you definitely need a truck. You've borrowed my truck 10 times. He goes, I don't need a truck because I got this friend named Harold and he has a truck. And I was like, touche, you're right. You don't need a truck. You can borrow my truck anytime. And it's like that with tools and equipment. You have some things, you know, and if you're willing to share and you get around another group of people who are willing to share, you don't have to all have everything. You can use that in community, and it saves a lot of money. It makes a lot of tools available. And it's just good stewardship, really, right, with your money, your finances, and be able to, because tools and equipment are expensive. And especially if it's something you're only going to use maybe once or twice a year or once or twice every few years or something, you know, there's no sense in really having all that stuff. I think that tools are something, and equipment are something that are great to include in that, make available for that. And there are things called tool libraries and maker spaces that are more for whole communities.
The libraries, because I found those, like a stuff library, a tool library. Mm-hmm. We have some of those at our library. Lends out a few.
Really? See, I don't even know if ours does that. They have a seed library there, but
it has a sewing machine and
really
interesting. But I was thinking, as far as homesteading stuff, I mean, the things that you could use with this, and if you planned it well enough, which we're going to get into, I guess, but is like a plucker and a meat grinder. If you get really good ones, those are expensive.
Mm-hmm.
I the same people that gave me the mushrooms have this huge trailered, like it's actually its own trailer, wood chipper.
Mm-hmm.
Like huge.
Yeah, yeah. Those are great. Told yeah.
Us that we could borrow and
throw a whole tree in there and it grinds it up.
Yay. But yeah, so stuff like that, like you know, there's just so many of those things that are really big ticket items that you don't necessarily use every.
Like I have some equipment that I've loaned out to people. Like I have a welder, you know, and then there's people who, it's not something that everybody, you know, has or wants, you know, but something breaks, it's metal, you need to weld something rather than go buy a new something. If you just have a crack in something or whatever. Yeah. I mean, if you have a friend that has a welder, it's great to have, you know, and I'm always willing to loan mine out and let somebody use it if they know what they're doing, or I'll do it for them, you know, but, and I'm thinking about, like, this is funny because I had a plumbing issue one time where I had a sewer pipe clog up bad. Like everything I'd done, I could not get it to bust loose. I'm hitting it with rams. I got an auger, ran down through there, and it would not go past it. And I'm like, what is down there? You know, well, I figured it out, but I thought, now where is it exactly? And what position is it in? It ended up being the actual, in the floor of my basement. I have like a drain, but it has like one of them expansion rubber things that seal it up. So where nothing goes down, it seals it. Anyway, that thing came apart and actually went down the pipe and plugged up my pipe. And it was a perfect fit too. I mean, it jammed in there and it wasn't going nowhere. And I didn't know what it was. I was like, I don't know what's under there. But how I found out was I bought one of them scope cameras, like 50 foot, and I ran it down through there and hit it on your computer and you can see the camera all the way down through there. And that's something like, that's one of them tools that, like, who needs that? And how often do you need that?
Right.
You know, but somebody might need that and you have it available, you know. It's just so the littlest things like that, you know, not everybody has, but now they have to run out and buy that. It's $100 or whatever they got to spend. But, you know, Harold's got one of those. I can just call him.
Well, not only do you have to buy it, then you have to store it.
Yeah. Right.
Right now, like as a small homestead, and we're not even that big, we have storage problems.
I do too.
I have my canning stuff. I have, mm-hmm. you know, we do butcher our own deer and stuff when we get them. So we've got the meat grinder, but we have a meat slicer. I mean, you just start to accumulate this stuff. And then, you know, then that's just the in-house tools. Then we have the garage tools. So.
Absolutely. I mean, but somebody else has got things you don't have. And now you're going to go out and buy those things. But if you had a community, if you had a network of people that you knew what they had, it could be that you could be better stewards with your money and borrow that item and make better use of it too. Because some of this stuff, I mean, it lasts forever. It doesn't really wear out or anything. Some of these things are just stuff that just doesn't get used that often. You know, some things it's actually harder on them just sitting around not getting used than if you would actually put them to use, you know.
Yeah. And if you get enough people doing something like this, you don't feel bad about maybe instead of buying the Walmart cheapy meat grinder, you spend a little bit more money getting the one that's nicer.
Yeah.
That will live longer. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe you get the Hobart instead of the Walmart special, you know?
Yeah. And it does bring the point up of, okay, what if I loan it to Fred over here and he breaks it?
Yeah.
Now what? And that's something you have to work out ahead of time. I mean, you have to be willing to maybe fix it or get it fixed or buy a new one if something like that happens. I mean, the bottom line is if you wouldn't have had access to that, you would have had to go buy one anyway. Right. Now, if it breaks under your watch, you broke it. I mean, the right thing to do is to replace it, or at least replace the parts that broke or something. So, I mean, it's something you definitely want to work out in your community, you know?
Exactly. And if you have a chronic abuser, you're going to have it's, I think if you're going to be doing something, especially with like larger equipment, that's quite expensive, you're obviously going to have to work out something together and say, well, how are we all going to deal with this if something like this happens? And, or if somebody chronically returns things in disrepair or dirty.
Yeah.
You know, how many times do we address this before we just kind of don't allow them to be part of this anymore?
Yeah, right. One way around that, though, I guess we're going to go into the facilitation part of all this. But one way around that on the facilitating part would be doing community purchasing. If you say you have 10 families or five families, buy it together. All take a piece of it, and the person with the most room can store it. But hey, we're all going to use that, you know? And there's some big items where you could do that. I mean, it's really expensive, that, you know, you could definitely, purchase that as a community. Again, you would have, it's kind of like that, a mixture of that communal living atmosphere, but you're separate. You're not having to deal with each other's garbage. There you go. Yeah. You're your own homestead, but there are some things that you're kind of communal, living in that way, you know, with the purchasing. And there's obviously, this could lead to issues. They have to be people who are like-minded. They have people you really get along. You know, if you're just going to do this with a bunch of strangers and not take the time to really get to know them first, I wouldn't be, you know, purchasing things in community like that. But if these are some of your closest friends and you've known them for years, you know, I mean, it's your call, but I wouldn't hesitate on that with the closest of my friends. You know, that's the reason they're my friends. If I can't trust somebody, I don't want to be their friend. Right.
Right. Yeah. And then, I mean, and somebody's going to have to be good with logistics and, mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe together as a group, you have 10 people and you all want to do chickens. Well, so-and-so is going to have to buy their chickens, so they're ready this week, and the next person will have theirs ready the next week. And, you know, you're going to have to somehow figure that, or you have them all done at the same time and then you function stack. And you go, okay, we're going to share the plucker and the meat grinder all at the same time. And we're going to all get together and butcher our birds together.
Bring them over to my house. Let's get after it. That's right. Yeah.
All of these together in the same
to do
day.
That. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. I think it could work. And I think the way the makerspaces do them, and this is an option, I don't know if it's one I would opt for, is people pay deposits.
Mm-hmm.
And then the deposit's refunded when it's returned in working order type of thing. Yeah, that's more if you get involved in a situation where you don't know very many people. And
right.
But you still want to do something like this.
Well, it was funny because when we had this little conversation after we recorded last week on our podcast last week, I got kind of excited thinking about some stuff. And the next day I actually talked to a friend of mine on the phone, and who's local here. He's a homesteader. And we just started like just thinking about like, wow, we should really do this. We should, you know, this winter, we should really try to get a few of these families together here locally. And we should try to kind of facilitate this. And we started thinking about maybe ways that could happen. And there was a church I was going to years ago, and I was a deacon in this church. Well, one of the jobs of the deacons was kind of like to be there for help, you know, to help get people help if they needed help for something. And we kind of, our church kind of went beyond and above on that. And we put these folders together. We had all the church members who were willing to fill out this form we gave them. And in this form, it was like, what skills do you have that you're willing to share? Oh. What tools do you have that you're willing to share? All these things. And it was just, we just did like this form, you know, and then we had a book where we put all this in a book where we could like, oh, this person's having this trouble right now. I wonder who in our book has a skill in that or who has that tool. And we would go through and look and we'd give them a call and then we'd connect those two people if they were willing to do it. And it worked really well. And I got to thinking about How do you do that on a homesteading level? Well, you could easily put together a binder of everybody's listing of anything they're willing to share and any skills they have and any, you know, labors that they're willing to do, and put that in a folder, and everybody in that, say you got 7-8 families in that, everybody gets a binder. And now they could actually call the other person and say, hey, man, I see you're in the binder with this tool. Is that available, or you still have that? Or, you know, is it something I can use and, you know, work it out, or, you know, something like that. I mean, you could put together these folders for everybody that has all this information, and you could update it once a year with new tools that have been purchased or whatever. And you know, every year just send out the forms again, say, is there anything you'd like to add to this? You know, any new skills you developed, or is there any new tools you have that you're willing to share? And I think that is something that would be pretty non-invasive, but yet really easy to facilitate. You know what I mean? And make it available.
Yeah. I think that sounds like a really good idea. And you could like start that with like, I think you kind of have to decide your radius, or people have to decide mm-hmm. how far they want to travel or something right. like this. And you could start it with like a homestead meetup that you find all the homesteaders mm-hmm. within a certain radius, whatever works for you. And then you could start like a Facebook group, and that could be a start of this.
Yeah.
And you can then create a time that you actually get together and meet together in person and kind of
yep.
start this. And now is the perfect time to start thinking about this stuff as winter's coming.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what we were talking about. A friend of mine is, you know, this winter, this would be a great opportunity to get some of these families together, sit down, say, what do you think? And just you know, just kind of spitball some ideas and see if we can't actually make something happen. Because I just don't feel like I do enough locally. I mean, you and I both, we're on everything. We're showing up on other podcasts and videos, and we're doing this, and we're, you know, I wrote a book once, you know, I'm trying to hit at people everywhere, but how much am I doing locally, you know? And I want to be more involved locally, because that's where your real sustainability and self-sufficiency is going to matter. If anything ever really happens, is locally.
And burnout too. I mean,
yeah.
So many homesteaders get burned out and exhausted because we try to do it all ourselves.
Yes.
And, yeah. And even if you're tired, something about doing something together as a group of people, you just find the mm-hmm. energy to
yeah.
finish a project. Or, you know, we had a local farmer, actually one of our friends, hurt his leg really bad. It was a freak accident, and, broke his leg. I can't even remember how many places, several places. And it was right before planting season. And this was that 20 acre plot that we mm-hmm. planted with corn and squash, and we planted it in like 4 hours.
Yeah. You know? That's awesome.
It's amazing what you can do when you do things together, and it's so much more enjoyable. And I think that's, you know, one of the Amish do that really well.
Yeah.
They, you know, that community thing.
I think the binder idea and even you could do online documents or whatever, but I think it would expand beyond just like the tool library or the skills. I mean, you know, you could actually involve like what we're going to grow with the food shares. You could actually have your, you know, who's growing what in there, you know, that we're willing to trade, who has this meat that they'll be willing to trade for that meat, who has, you know, what days maybe are you available normally to help on a project. You could actually facilitate to yeah. use the binders to kind of facilitate,
I think
facilitate some of that.
Yeah. The binder thing is like, that is a phenomenal idea.
I think you could do both. You could do online stuff and then also have a binder too. But it'd be just neat to grab that like an old school phone book almost and look up Farmer Fred over on my homestead and give him a call because he's got the tool I need for that. So, hey, you know, or, you know, but then maybe you could have maybe two or three people who are maybe more focused on the community activities. Say, you know, these two people here, the people who are going to try to facilitate the group workings. You know, when you got a job, you call one of those guys, they're going to send out one of those people, and they're going to send out the information to everybody and say, who's willing to be involved in this, or who's able to, cause he's got this big project and he's going to need, you know, 5 or 8 people, who's willing to jump in and help him with that, you know? And then, And I think there's just I think that this is something that would, even when it comes down to introverts and people who aren't real people, this is something that wouldn't be that hard to really do, especially if you could just make the phone calls and get people at a local meeting first and just kind of get to know everybody. Now we're all friends. Let's make this happen. Yeah. I mean,
we're talking about the lending library, doing it together as homesteaders, but you can do this you could put everything in there. You could put what products your farm, if you sell them, or even if you don't sell them. But we, every year, say somebody grows corn. Well, you look through that little binder and you're like, oh, our corn did not do good this year. This binder, oh, so-and-so always grows corn. Maybe I can call them.
Yeah.
And they would like some of my potatoes and mm-hmm. I can get some corn because mine didn't do good.
Yeah.
You know, or so-and-so likes to knit and I need to buy some gifts for grandma for Christmas. Maybe she would want to trade some knit washcloths. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know.
The skills and the products are endless that you could work out trades with and bartering. And it just builds this community of people that are going to know each other. They're going to help each other whenever they get it, they get an opportunity. And again, this is an expanded closed loop system, but it's not so expanded that it's outside of your territory. I mean, I think, you know, 10, 15 mile radius, maybe 20 miles. I don't know. It depends. You could work that out.
Some areas.
Yeah. I mean, if you're living in, you know, Montana, you're probably going to have to go 50 mile radius or 100 mile radius around here. It's, you know, it's probably like, I mean, there's a 5 mile radius here. There's a lot of people doing that, you know, but I would think a 10 mile radius in my area would be pretty good. You know, you're covering the whole county pretty much. So. What was that?
I'm a unicorn where I'm at. So I have to have mine stretched a little further. Probably 40 miles would be good.
I would say on urban homesteaders, there's a lot of people I think that are, here's the thing. There's a lot of people growing food in their yards. And there's a lot of people doing things here in the urban environment. And they don't call themselves homesteaders because they think, oh, one day I'll want to be a homesteader when I get 20 acres, you know, but they don't consider what they're doing homesteading right now. I think these are the people that would be really important to reach out to because they're people who don't really think in a bigger scale of what they're doing, how important it is, you know? And I think you could help them realize the potential of what they're doing, even in their yard. Like that friend of mine I was talking about, he'll probably listen to this because I think he listens to this podcast, but he don't do a ton of stuff. They have a garden. They don't have any livestock right now. He lives in town. He's got probably a quarter acre. His wife is phenomenal at like preserving things. She's really big into canning and preserving and things like that. So, I mean, they've got some skills, but I don't know that they would call themselves homesteaders because they're in town, you know? And it's like, but I told him, you guys are, you know, and there's so much more you could be doing, but even if you didn't want to, when you do what you're doing in a community of people who are doing the same thing, now you're doing a lot, you know?
Yeah. Well, here it's not even common for people to have a garden here.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know why.
But. So you're probably going to start contacting people. And if you're building something like this in your area, it's probably going to be people with maybe 5 acres or something
I'm
around you.
I'm trying to get people to garden and more and more people are getting interested in it.
Yeah.
In my area, but it's not that common.
I think a lot of people wonder if it's worth it on a small property.
Yes.
Can I do enough to even make a difference? And they think it just isn't enough, you know? And I think if you can convince them that, especially with this network of people doing it, now it's really worth it. Because if all you're doing is growing kale and all you're doing is growing tomatoes, guess what? You can trade some of each to each person and now you got two crops and you didn't grow any extra. You didn't grow anything more or any different.
All you want to grow is flowers, but I would like some flowers for my table.
Yeah.
I can trade tomatoes for your flowers.
There you go.
It doesn't even have to be edible.
Yeah. Or just some thing you're making. Say you're making soap. A lot of people are into soap making. You know, they don't even homestead. Right. They just make soap. My daughter makes soap. She has a blast doing it. She just has fun with it. She it ain't got nothing to do with homesteading. She just loves to make soap, you know, but you got people like that and you trade your soap for some tomatoes or whatever, you know, I mean, that's great. Again, I think that putting that community in touch with one another. And I think there's a lot, like there's just an event that happened here in Indiana where I'm at. It was called the Indiana Homesteaders Conference. I didn't go to it. I didn't even know about it until like 3 weeks before it was happening. I hadn't even heard. I don't even know how I didn't hear about it. And then all of a sudden I started seeing all this stuff about it and it was already sold out at that point.
Oh no.
And I was like, well, I would have went to that. That sounded great. Yeah. You know,
I'm thinking to myself, we need one of these.
But anyway, I was looking at the Instagram on that. And now what's kind of wild is a bunch of people who went to that are starting their county homesteading groups.
Nice.
And it spawned from the state one, you know, and now there hasn't been one started here in my county, I don't think yet, But I'm thinking, there's a start right there. You could actually take that group and do that in these groups, in these county groups.
And I think we're seeing another awakening of the homestead movement, kind of like the back to the land movement of the 70s. I think mm-hmm. we're kind of seeing that again right now.
Yeah.
It's surging. And now is the perfect time to start like stuff like this. And like you said, I mean, you don't even have to be a homesteader, but if you like to bake, if you like to knit, if you like to whatever,
yeah.
quilt, I don't know, make soap, you can still be a part of these.
Yeah, absolutely.
Be a part of these groups and the community.
Or if you're just a person, you live in an apartment, but you grew up on a farm. Now you're living in an apartment and you're willing to help out on a farm. Yeah. You know, or they're going to cut
because someday you want to get out,
or that they just go out and they trade some of their labor to put some food in the refrigerator.
Right.
You know, trade for some food, you know, their labor for some food. I mean, you could be involved in it with zero land and do that. I just think that there's so much opportunity when you expand that closed loop to your neighbors, to the people around you. Yeah. And whether it's labor, food or tools or whatever else you can think of, I'm sure there's other things that we're not thinking of that could be part of a community aspect in that.
Right. And there's a few people too, that like, somebody might have a kitchen. There's a few people there here locally. There's a few places where there's a certified kitchen.
Yeah. So
if you wanted to make strawberry jam and sell it at the farmer's market, you could maybe use their certified kitchen to do that.
Or you might have a local herbalist who's really has some great knowledge as far as herbal remedies and making things. And you know what, you can get that person, or you could even give them some of your herbs to make stuff. Or, I mean, there's just all kinds of things you could work out there.
Yeah. I think you could make this as big and as small as you want to.
Yeah. Yeah. I think of course there's risks on both ends. If it's too small, you accomplish less, but if it's too big, I think it's less personal and you don't know as people as well. So, I mean, there's probably a middle ground there. And I think it just depends on your area and maybe how good you are at networking and how, you know, how good you can organize the group. I would think an ideal group sounds like, you know, 8, 10, 12 families doing this sounds ideal. I mean, to me, but it could be a lot more.
You could turn it into like, you could make it into pods too, and like the 8, 10, 12 groups. And then, like you were saying, you have your state one and then you have your county one. And
yeah.
You could make it a little bit smaller.
Yeah, absolutely.
You could somehow link all that together.
Yeah.
If you wanted to.
I mean, there's people who are way better at facilitating things than I am, but even at that, I think there's things that like this, that would be pretty easy to make it work out on a small scale, especially like I said, 8 or 10 families would not be hard to get together. Once a year, fill out some forms. This is what I'm willing to do. Hey, let's be there for one another, you know? And there's just a security aspect to it too, because if, you know, I say it every other episode, we're not doom and gloomers, but the reality is something could happen someday. You just don't know. And how great would it be to have a local community, a network of people right around you that are willing to come together and help one another if stuff ever hit the fan. You know what I mean?
If you ran out of toilet paper.
That would never happen in the United States. What are you talking about? That could never happen.
Years ago.
That's what I'm saying. I'm being sarcastic because it did happen, didn't it?
But I mean, seriously, what if somebody in your family got sick? I mean, it doesn't always have to be something that happens to the outside world, but if you had somebody in you've had your own battles with health. I've had my own battles with health.
Yeah.
You know, what if somebody, you needed somebody's help, and then you can return the favor when you feel better.
Last week I threw my back out and I was struggling around here for 2 or 3 days, something like that. You need help. Yes, you throw your back out and hey, could somebody come over here? There is a bunch of firewood that needs to be stacked over here. I cannot do it. My back is out. Is there anybody that can help me stack this firewood over here? Exactly. You know, something like that.
And then the reality is something could happen for me right now. You know, we're not doom and gloomers, but I will tell you, for me, because of our special foods, it's kind of been hard once in a while for me to find certain things because we have dietary restrictions. So we can't just switch. If you can't find this brand, we can't just switch to this kind of, I don't know. Let me try to find an example. Our bread, for example, I make our own bread, but when I was buying my own bread and my we couldn't find a specific brand, and there was only one kind.
But even if you're making your own bread, the flour, you can't find the flour that you need to make the bread that you need to make a special bread. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, those things are happening right now on a smaller scale, and they are affecting some people. I mean, some people are lucky that they can just switch to a different thing,
but
some of us aren't. And so that does happen. So to have these groups, you know, for me, be able to call somebody up and say, hey, can, do you have corn? Do you have any sorghum? Do you have buckwheat?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Crisis doesn't just happen on a national level. It happens very personal and local to some areas. Right. And it could definitely be something you're facing. It's not unheard of, you know, not even, especially in the last couple of years, it's definitely not unheard of. And I think there's just a level of protection and security even in this for your family to have this network of people. And I know I would trust, I would feel a lot safer and have a lot more trust in if things went really haywire and local homesteaders that I know rather than the neighbors and that aren't doing anything, you know,
or strangers or I mean, you think about, there's just so many examples, you know, you have a barn fire, you have, Florida just had a huge hurricane.
You know, I think I'm safe from hurricanes, but
We are, but
we have tornadoes bad around here.
Yeah. You just had a recent podcast with your person that did fishing. And of course they live in Florida.
Yeah.
You know,
they were affected. Yeah.
Having people come, having that group of people that can come and help you if their farm wasn't affected, if their homestead wasn't affected, they can come and help you. I mean,
We
live in a world where things happen.
And we also live in a world that isn't nearly as connected locally as it was decades ago. You know, used to, you knew everybody in a certain mile radius of you. Now, I don't know people that live on my street.
Yeah, we don't either. Yeah.
And that's crazy when you really think about it. I mean, that's crazy. That wouldn't have happened 50 years ago. People knew people, you know?
So the good news is we have technology.
It's good and bad, right? Yeah.
It can be a good thing and it can be a bad thing. But if, you know, you can use things like Facebook to create a community group because homesteaders are busy. You can, I mean, we actually have a Facebook. There's Facebook groups for like our little local area, and it's broken into little areas, and people will.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've seen those. Or, you know.
Yeah.
But, you can do something like, you could use Facebook, you could use Google Docs, you could use whatever to do something like this.
Yeah, you could. There's actually, and I don't know if they're willing to do it or not, but there's actually a new community out there for homesteaders called Freesteading, I think it's called. And I got in it, and I mean, there's a lot of people in there already. There's actually a couple people in my county that are in there, because you can join your state group.
I guess I have to get back on it, because I was a little confused by it.
Yeah, they don't have the app out yet. I think they're still waiting on the app to get done. I think it's close though. And then once an app gets done, that's going to be way better, because right now you just kind of got to go on the website and do it. But I think once the app is released, I think it's going to be awesome. And it has a really good little networking system in there. Now, when it comes to building an actual community in there, I think it has to go through like an approval, like you have to fill out a form and they put it together for you. And so I don't know at some point if it's going to be real easy just to do maybe something through there. That might be, and it might, and because it's not something that's controlled like a Facebook, it might be a safer place to, where, you know, Facebook could just shut you down if they don't like what you're saying about butchering your animals or something. You know, it's something like that. It might be a good place to do it. And I don't know if that's going to be I don't know how local the people who run that want to get with something like that. But I mean, who knows? Those might be some kind of options you could use that would keep it more in this realm of homesteaders.
Yeah. I think, you know, all this is easily doable. You can, I'm trying to think, I made a bunch of notes and I was looking to see if I had any. Yeah. Well, and, oh, I just thought of something. The other thing that you could do is, like I was saying, we had a Facebook group, somebody was giving away a bike. You could have like that pile of goods. Well, I don't want this anymore.
Yeah. You know?
Like a trade thing here.
Yeah. It's kind of like a free cycle, but for homesteaders. Like a
free cycle, but in your homestead.
Yeah. Know, they go first. Yeah.
I'm using this can like I thought I would, or.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I have a little, like I have this little electric rototiller that I don't ever use because it's like I've gotten to where I don't rototill anymore, really, except for unless I'm putting something new in. And if I'm putting something big and new in, I'm probably going to need something more than that little electric tiller, you know. Right. Who could use that though? I mean, somebody could use that to even put in a flower bed or something like that. It's like, I don't need it. Who wants it? You know, come get it. And it'd be better to do that in a community of homesteaders than it would be, you know, just to anybody. I mean, first to your homesteading community.
Yeah. I mean, it could be, oh, I have this bag of yarn I thought I would use. I'd never gonna use it. You know,
yeah.
It can be so many things.
Or food too. I mean, say I put up, you know, I put up 100 jars of pears, you know, it's been a year and I've only ate 40 of them, you know, okay. Who wants these before, you know, they start getting too old, you know, people say, oh, I'll take them, you know?
Yeah, perfect.
Just whatever. You could just give stuff away. Cause I've been known to do that. Take one or two items and way overdo it with the preserving. Pears keep coming to my mind. Grapes, jelly. We generally eat all that, but
I wish I lived by you. I'd make some grape jam.
Always have a lot of grapes. Like there's a lot of grapes that go to waste because I don't even feel like making that much jelly. But they, you know, just things like that. I mean, you can open your orchard up. Say we've picked everything we want. Who wants to come over and pick the rest? Yep. It's yours. You know,
I feel like that with that's what my potatoes were like that this year. I'm like,
yeah.
What am I ever going to do with all these potatoes?
Yeah. And again, if you had your binder or your Facebook page, you could just put it out there, or you could call individuals, you know, that don't have that. Say, hey, would you guys be interested in this? And, you know, I just think it would not be that hard to facilitate something like this and put it together. Okay. Even for a person who is, you know, kind of an introvert, I'm not even a bit threatened by the idea of this. So I think it just sounds so easy because these are my people. You know, I love talking to other homesteaders, even locally.
Right.
And I just think it sounds like something I would actually enjoy being a part of, you know, not just feel like it's something, oh, you should do it. I think I would love it. I mean, it just sounds fun, if nothing else.
Knowledge. I mean, so you said you have a welder. So that means you probably have some skills welding.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe somebody else has knife making skills that you want to learn, but they want to learn welding. You could do those things too.
Yeah. You're getting ready to do an interview with somebody who's a forager.
Yes.
My foraging skills aren't great when it comes to mushrooms and things like that. I would love to have somebody in a community like that say, oh, I know every mushroom in this area. Right, I know what you can eat, what you can't, what it'll do. And, you know, and let that person take us out and show a few of us how to do something. That's great. I mean, I think that would be awesome to have a community of people like that.
Exactly. I would rake their yard and mow their lawn if they could take me to the woods to show me.
Yes.
That. Yeah.
I would be more than willing to share in some labor for that kind of education and their skill. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So it can be skills and teaching too. And mm-hmm. even if you think that you don't have a homesteading skill, there's so many skills that are homesteading, in my opinion.
Yeah. You know. Like you said, needlework. Yeah.
Yeah. All of that stuff, I feel like falls into that realm of homesteading.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. Yep. So I just think that it's something maybe some people want to maybe take some initiative and get started with this. I think it can only make you stronger, make your homestead more sustainable. I don't see the only negatives I see in it is if you had some real losers in a community like that were tearing stuff up or just would never show up to do their part when you showed up to do yours. And I mean, there's a possibility of that.
Right.
But I think for the most part, most homesteaders are the kind of folks that will do what they say and you know, and be part of something like that. If they say they're going to be part of something like that, they'll do it. You know, they'll do their share.
Yep.
So I just think, you know, maybe get out there and take some chances, meet some people, do this. You know, we dropped a few links in the show notes of on makerspaces, you know, tool libraries.
A little bit. Yeah. And there's one from U of M where it talks about kind of how to facilitate something like a makerspace.
Yeah. Like a tool library or makerspace. I put something in there about running your own permaculture blitz, which it doesn't have to be permaculture to be a blitz like that. It could be a homesteading blitz, you know, just show up and do a big homesteading job. Yeah. There's a whole article in there from Permaculture News on how to do that, how to facilitate something like that. And so, check out those links. I think they're useful. I just feel like I feel like it's something we as homesteaders should definitely be thinking about. And if nothing else, these last 2 or 3 years have really shown us that there is some reasons to network locally and be involved locally with things.
Yeah. That's a good word, the network.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what we call this, but I feel like it's part of a closed loop system, yeah. But it's not just your property. You know, it's
right.
It's definitely expanding out a few miles into to people you can trust. So yeah. Anything you'd like to add to this?
I think that's about it.
I think it's a valuable, something valuable. I think homesteaders could take some things here from. And you know what, folks, if you maybe can think of some other ways to facilitate something like this, or you think some other ideas that would work in a community like this, jump in the Homestead Front Porch and let's get and just share your ideas in there. Our Facebook group is the Homestead Front Porch Facebook group. If you're not a member of that, request to be a member, answer yes to a couple questions and you're in, and drop your comments in there about this. As I think this is something as a community, as the bigger community of homesteaders that we are in that group, we could probably brainstorm this a little bit and come up with even better ideas. I mean, this is just two of us thinking this out, but if you get, 27,000 of us thinking about this out, like it's in that group, we can come up with even better ideas. So yeah, jump in there and share your ideas about this. I think it's a great thing. And I think it's something we should definitely be working on.
For sure. This could be really cool.
Well, folks, until the next episode, happy homesteading and God bless.
And grow where you're planted.
Looking around, I finally see, I think I need a change. The rat race, I want to flee, my world I'll rearrange. I'm getting back to the roots of how it's meant to be. Growing gardens, picking fruit, raising livestock, living free. It's a modern homestead. Build a modern homestead. A lot of folks don't understand why I wanna live this way. They never eat them from their land like we do here. Snapping beans like grandma did, sitting on her front porch. Hunting and fishing like a kid, once you've done all of your chores. It's a modern homestead. Build a modern homestead. Country or city, there's a way. Make this change, you gotta start today.